We have a couple of guests with us tonight. They are Sherry Connable, who's a homeless advocate, though you're not homeless yourself, right?
That's right.
And she's probably best known for organizing Earth Day this April in Santa Cruz. Also with her is Brian Kepke. He's a local street person, founder of the Homeless Alliance, and he's also a manager currently at the Free Meal Program near the River Street Shelter. And I'd like to thank you both for joining us. So as I understand it, there's sort of a new group, a new movement to create a temporary emergency campground behind the River Street Shelter. Perhaps you could start, Sherry, and give us a little background.
Yeah, there is a new group. It's called the Coalition for a Safe Place to Sleep. And this group is basically a group of citizens who are doing support work with the homeless community. We have been meeting on a regular basis with 30 to 40 representatives of the homeless community at the Free Meal Program at the River Street Shelter and developing proposals about proactive and humane solutions to the situation that they find themselves in. When we first started meeting about a month and a half ago, we started to talk about the possibility of creating a designated camping area, given the fact that there's a camping ban in place in Santa Cruz. And it seemed like the political climate was such that there was certainly not a possibility that that camping ban was going to be rescinded. The next question that we asked was what then would be helpful? And clearly the answer was we need a place where legally we can sleep and not be subject to being ticketed just for going to sleep at night. And as we began to work on this possibility of a designated camping area, those of us who have been kind of involved in bureaucratic process in the past had to honestly say that by the time we located and permitted and put together a proposal for a designated camping site, it would probably take about a year. And when the homeless people heard that, they kind of looked at us and said, well, where do we sleep tonight? And where do we sleep tomorrow? And we need a place right now that's a safe zone. And so they put out a very strong plea that we would identify some area that in the meantime could be a temporary sanctuary where they would be able to legally sleep, where there'd be minimum services like, you know, portable toilets and a dumpster for trash, and that would create an atmosphere for them in which they could then continue discussions with us about the possibility of a more permanent campground area. And obviously would meet their immediate need not to be committing a crime when they go to sleep at night. I think the thing that we had to respond to as a citizens group was the urgency of the request and the reality faced that in a city that has a camping ban on the books and chooses to enforce it, for someone who doesn't have shelter, there's a question that has to be asked, which is where do they go? Where do they go at night when they need to go to sleep? And this was an attempt to answer that question. So the site that was identified was the area behind the River Street Shelter. There's about an acre and a half of vacant land there. It's not being used. The land was purchased to serve homeless people. It's city-owned land. There's a tentative project to build a low-income housing project there, which would start in about a year and a half. But in the meantime, the land is vacant and unused, and so it seemed a really natural site.
Mm-hmm. Isn't that fact that the city hopes to build there eventually being used as an excuse by some people in the city not to allow your proposal to move forward?
Yeah, the group that's actually putting that proposal together is the Citizens Committee for the Homeless, and they are also the ones who got the River Street Shelter off the ground and built, or at least, you know, funded and put together. They actually have just endorsed our proposal and are very much in favor of it, and they understand that we understand and are committed to their project, and that this really is a temporary site, and this is an immediate response to the situation homeless people are in, and that there really is a commitment then to look for a nicer and a more permanent facility that could serve more people. We actually have begun looking at possible sites, and we are hoping to bring the county in on that negotiation and in that process, in part because they are the jurisdiction charged with serving low-income people, and they have access to more funds and programs, and also just because our own point of view is that this is a countywide problem, that the county has a significant responsibility to address the issue.
Mm-hmm. So your group is a fairly new group, the Coalition for a Safe Place to Sleep, mm-hmm. and you've brought together other groups. You have a lot of maybe even prominent community members backing your mm-hmm. idea at this point.
Yeah, we do.
Uh-huh. Maybe could talk to Brian for a second. Now, you've been on the street for some time in this community, and you've been an activist for the homeless, and maybe you could tell us how you've seen the process work in getting the city or other jurisdictions to help solve this crisis of people not having a place to stay.
Well, do you mean that there has been a city response? I really haven't seen much.
Well, there's been the shelter, they would say.
Yeah, the shelter project started like back in 1984 with a group headed mostly by Jane Emler and Paige Smith. And when it started, the city was dead set against it until Jane did her 42-day fast for a shelter. And then the city caved in and agreed to purchase the land for the shelter, which was purchased with federal funds, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And the shelter opened in like 85 or 86. I'm more acquainted with the process whereby the meal originated. You know, that it began at the town clock, and
a lot of people were arrested for serving food to the poor.
Yeah,
that's right.
January 3rd and 4th, back in 1989, there were a lot of arrests at the clock. And it got really embarrassing to the city to the point where they caved in and gave us a food permit.
Uh-huh. And now you're serving free meals at the River Street Shelter, or in the field. Is it the same field?
Yeah, it's the field by the River Street Shelter, and we're serving there every night at 4:45.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And they allocated some funding for that, too, didn't they? It was more than just a permit, wasn't it? Or am I mistaken?
I don't think the city gave us any funding. I know that we got a lease from them for 3:30 to 7:30. But mm-hmm. we got some funding from the county, but mostly private funding and grants.
Mm-hmm. They do the lease on the field. They also provide the porta-potties and the dumpster pickups, which represents an in-kind contribution of probably, I would imagine, $2,000 or $3,000 a year of those services.
Mm-hmm.
But in terms of actual funding, that's come through the county and other private donations.
Uh-huh. So,
one exciting thing, just as an aside to that, is the free meal program was just given a $5,000 grant by United Way, and that's, I think, a real significant feather in their cap in terms of the quality of the program, what was seen there. United Way is quite discretionary about what kind of programs they choose to fund. So I think that's a real compliment to that program, the kind of work that's been done there, and especially the self-help model that it's built on, that for the most part the homeless people run it and do it themselves. And we're kind of capitalizing on that when we propose the campground, because we've seen that they have been very successful in setting up a program themselves and governing it and monitoring it and making it work.
Mm-hmm. Has the meal been going along pretty well without incidents? I know they had a fire at their kitchen on Emmeline Street, but does it seem realistic that the beneficiaries of campground could actually police themselves and it wouldn't become a big bureaucratic deal?
Well, the meal, to a large extent, is done by homeless people, and we've been able to get people together who are responsible and willing to stick with it. And things have been working out better than I expected, really. And I think the same thing can be done for a campground, for mm-hmm. a sanctuary area for people.
How many people would you hope to accommodate at that site?
We're still negotiating the numbers. What I'm hearing is that the realistic projection is probably somewhere between 75 to 125 would, want to stay there. And we would want an upward maximum somewhat above that, so that if there were more people who needed, to come, that they wouldn't be turned away.
Mm-hmm. I've noticed there was a big homeless activist gathering July 4th, and mm-hmm. things seem to have quieted down. And for example, you don't see the table at the post office anymore. And I was wondering, are people burning out, or are people shifting their energy to this proposal and giving up on trying to end the camping ban?
Well, the burnout factor is that the people at the table had so many tickets that they're in court just about every day. And you can find them down in the basement of the county building at traffic court. And the way they're doing traffic court now, they're skipping all the other tickets, or rather skipping the camping tickets and taking those last. So you'll be scheduled for 1:30 and you won't get out of there until 7:30. And so that's really why the table moved, is because people are spending a lot of time in court now.
Mm-hmm.
My sense also with that, Dan, is a lot of the people who've been involved in the table action are actively involved in generating this proposal. And one of the strengths I see of this particular proposal is that basically it's a proposal that's been developed by homeless people. And the role that we're playing, those of us who have shelter and who have experience doing community organizing, is one of really being advisory and to try to help it through the bureaucratic process because we know how to do that. But the proposal is their own. They've generated most of the terms of it, how it would work, how it would be governed. And so I think there's a large degree of ownership and excitement about working on a project that this many community people have come to and said, yeah, we think you're right about needing that, and we're going to do what we can do to help you get that.
Mm-hmm. How has the city council responded?
It's a mixed response at this point. We're still in the process of finalizing the proposal, so they haven't seen a final draft, and they're waiting to see that, of course, what it would really look like. I think there are some council members who are very favorable and others who are skeptical. It's a difficult political climate because it's an election year, and some people see any kind of proactive stance for homeless people as an election hotspot. You know, there's differing hypotheses about that. My own hypothesis is at this point to take a really proactive and let's do something that's humane and in line with our values and our vision will help us in the long run in terms of electoral strategy. Other people don't necessarily share that.
Mm-hmm. I noticed our phone was just ringing and that person hung up. I guess we can open the conversation up to the callers if you'd like to do that.
Sure.
So our number is 459-4036, and if that person calling wants to talk about this issue, please call. And I hear our office phone ringing, so perhaps they want to talk about something else.
The other thing I would just want to say is my sense, having worked on this and seeing how quickly so many people have come together who are really committed to working on this project and who have experience in the past in peace and social justice issues or whatever, is that it was just kind of on time. I think there's been a lot of discomfort for a long time in the community about the homeless situation and a feeling that it didn't look like the camping ban was going to be lifted, and maybe we didn't even want it lifted necessarily, but what could be done? And my sense is that this looks like something that is movement in a good direction that is in line with the kind of values that Santa Cruz has represented for a long time. And so people are really relieved and have a lot of energy to bring to this project.
Okay, well, it looks like we have a caller.
So we need to put the
KZSC, are you on the air? Hello? Oh, I'm sorry. Well, you are. Okay, why don't you call back at around 7:30?
Okay, thank you
very much. Sorry. Happens every once in a while. Unfortunately, we don't have someone in the office at the moment. I'm sorry we were cut off there.
That's
okay. So, I noticed there's a huge amount of controversy in this community now. It's a very polarized issue.
Mm-hmm.
You have the so-called red shirts, Gerald Brusenhard, calling for increasing the penalty for camping from mm-hmm. a infraction to a misdemeanor, which would totally tie up the courts. And I just noticed in the press and so forth, there's just an incredible amount of hostility towards whatever people want to call people without shelter in this community.
Mm-hmm.
How do you deal with that kind of energy?
Well, I see it as people who come downtown and look at you and just don't like the way you look, and not only that, they're motivated by the political dialogue. And it just, it's the same kind of redneck, anti-hippie feeling that has been around for quite a while, really. And you just try and keep away from that kind of negative energy. I think, you know, that given the chance, all the powers that be would blame all their problems on the poor, including the drought. And I'm just, you know, I try to ignore the criticism, I really do.
You mentioned the drought, and I thought, you know, it's kind of off the wall, but then I was thinking of the way the city is rationing water and the fines applied for running over one's allotment, and they do discriminate intensely against poor people and people in multiple unit dwellings.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what made me think of the drought was when the homeless were blamed for the state the downtown is in these days, and really if you go there, you know it looks like a bomb hit it, you know, and yet they blame the presence of street people for their problem with investors, you know.
Mm-hmm. And that's resulted in kind of a crackdown I've seen this summer by the police harassing people more than usual.
The way the harassment starts these days, it seems to be that they remove the mall benches, the places where people can sit down. And so people sit down on the brick, which is the border for the plants that are planted and things. And then the police come along and tell people not to sit on the bricks. And it creates a situation, you know, that becomes police harassment, yeah.
Uh-huh. Well, it also seems to be a kind of a losing cycle, because when they take all the benches out, people in general just congregate at what few benches or walls or whatever are left. It seems like they're almost creating this kind of congregation problem, which they find so threatening.
I feel like asking them, do they want people downtown or not? Mm-hmm. You know, if they're there to remove services and things that people can use, then, you know, what's the point, really?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think a lot of people in the community are frustrated by it. I shop a lot downtown, and to put it bluntly, I probably get hassled by the police more than I do by street people, so I don't know what the problem is.
Yeah.
And that's not going to create a climate where people want to shop there.
I just wanted to respond to that a little bit, Dan. My sense is there's been certainly an increase in police activity, and I think it's a very complex situation. I think the earthquake has really pushed the community to its extremes, and things that maybe people were willing to tolerate in the past suddenly are becoming, you know, a bigger deal. I'm really concerned about an issue that Brian brought up in his first comment about that, which is it's what I call another ism, and I think it's an ism that we really need to guard against as a culture, and I call it looksism. It's decisions made about people based on how they looked and in which their basic rights are denied. And I find that really unacceptable, and certainly unacceptable in Santa Cruz with its reputation for compassion and kind of, you know, carrying forward the dream of the 60s.
Sorry about this. Don has to get by. It is unfortunate. It seems that there's always been a kind of hostility in this town against cultural types, and it seems to be escalating.
That's true. Later,
I guess maybe the subcultures are changing and so forth, but it's become more difficult to live in this community. It's a lot more crowded and expensive.
Well, I think we're also, what we're seeing, I think we need to remember, is not specific to Santa Cruz. It's happening all across the nation, this kind of backlash toward homeless people, toward poor people.
Mm-hmm.
I think the causes are complex. I mean, I think because there's been such an incredible rise in people who are shelterless and without resources, something that people used to be able to look the other way or sort of say, well, there's a few people like that, suddenly seems like a big threat. And my own sense is that we have a culture that in a certain way has always defined itself in terms of winners and losers. You know, bigger is better, more is better, two cars is better than one. And it seems ironic to me that in that situation you then take the people who, quote, have lost, you know, they may not feel they've really lost, but, you know, and then you push them further down, you repress them, and you tell them that they're the problem.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't think that's an acceptable way to structure our society.
Mm-hmm. How do you turn society around? A ridiculous question, but I imagine this is one place to start.
Yeah,
but it
yeah.
seems like there's so much to do.
There's certain things I feel. I feel like we all have a birthright. You know, I often say when I talk about homelessness that I think we all have a home, and that's called planet Earth. Some of us happen not to have shelter, but I think our home is the planet. And my sense is that a lot of what we're dealing with is based in fear. And if we can begin to get people to deal with their fear, to choose their hearts over their fear, that's a lot of the battle. And my sense of this is almost like this is the second American Revolution, but this is a revolution in nonviolence rather than violence. And it's defending the same principles. It's defending the idea that simply by being born, you have a certain set of rights that comes with taking birth on this planet. And those rights are to be defended for everyone, and it's not subject to how you look or how much money you have or what your color is or what your sex is or what your sexual preference is. It's only subject to the fact that you're born and you live here, and that this is really about defending those at a very basic level. And I feel like, having been in El Salvador and kind of advocated for what people were asking for in El Salvador, and then to come back to the United States and see that we can't even just provide a place to sleep, a shower, restroom facilities in a, you know, in a culture of this abundance, I think it's just, it's really ironic, and people are having to look at that and having a hard time having to look at it and what it might mean.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's a phenomenon I've noticed in this community where people into political activism on the left often will support a movement, for example, a revolution in El Salvador,
uh-huh.
And, you know, demand land reform there, and there actually has been a fair amount of land reform allegedly there. And yet, if people demanded that same thing here, or at least a radical redistribution of land resources for people to live,
mm-hmm.
The reaction, I imagine, would be, you know, even more violent than in El Salvador.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think you're right. I think a lot of us are aware of that. There's a real, you know, not in my backyard piece of this where, you know, even many people who have advocated for, you know, social justice in other places or environmental issues, all of a sudden this one is harder for people because it's right here. It means making adjustments in your own life. And I don't mean to not honor the downtown business community, because I have to say about that I understand for the downtown business community that the way of life that they've chosen is dependent on being able to make a living, and right now that feels very threatened because of the earthquake. And for them, that's real. It means their own houses, and it means, you know, sending their kids to college, and that I really support people and families. But what I think needs to happen in that scenario is, rather than identify homeless and street people as the problem to be cleaned up, therefore we are going to push them away, we're going to up police harassment, in fact, that I think is leading right now to police brutality, rather than taking that approach, I think the approach that needs to be taken is, we're all in this together. How can we sit down and respectfully dialogue and work with each other in a way that everybody gets what they need? And out of that, I think you come up with real solutions that work for the whole community rather than discriminatory solutions that really deny some people their basic rights.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, I should point out that you're listening to KZSC in Santa Cruz, and now might be a good time to take a musical break and gather our thoughts, and we'll be back in a few minutes. Coming up is Mark Levy.
I see him on the evening news. Somewhere there must be a place where they can park their weary shoes. Maybe a camp in the country or a building on the edge of town. But that shelter there across the street is only gonna get me down. Everybody should have a home. Everybody must be fed. Everyone has a right to a roof and below it a nice warm bed. We applaud your noble efforts at guarding their collective health, and we'll gladly give you funds and food long as you can put them somewhere else. See, I don't want to have to lock my door to be inside safe and sound. This neighborhood will go to pot with the likes of them around. It's no fun out there in the cold. Yes, I know just how they feel. But I just can't bear to see a hungry face when I'm eating a nice warm meal. Oh, everybody should have a home. Everybody must be fed. Everyone has a right to a roof and below it a nice warm bed. We applaud your noble efforts at guarding their collective health, and we'll gladly give you funds and food long as you can put them somewhere else. I've got a friend who owns a store about a half a block away. Every year she donates goods and money to United Way, but she thinks it's bad for business to have the homeless walking by. She says, why not send them south for the winter so they can stay warm and dry? Oh, everybody should have a home. everybody must be fed. Everyone has a right to a roof and below it a nice warm bed. We applaud your noble efforts at guarding their collective health, and we'll gladly give you funds and food long as you can put them somewhere else. Well, now please understand our position. It's not the way it looks. We want them housed, but out of sight. There are zoning laws on the books. Long as we can clear our conscience and preserve our civic pride, we'll give our consent, even pay the rent on a place where they can hide. 'Cause everybody should have a home. Everybody must be fed. Everyone has a right to fan below it a nice warm bed. We applaud your noble efforts at guarding their collective health, and we'll gladly give you funds and food long as you can put them somewhere else. Yes, we'll gladly give you funds and food long as you can put them somewhere else.
That was Mark Levy with the Homeless Shuffle. We have with us Sherry Connable and Brian Kempke, two homeless activists. Sherry, you said you wanted to talk about progressive politics in this town? Or is that too charged a question?
Well, I might get around to that. One thing that occurred to me that I think is really important for people to kind of hold in their consciousness as they, you know, as they form their own opinions around this issue is, as a coalition at this point, we've taken the position that there may be understandable reasons for a camping ban to be in place, but given that there is a camping ban in place, then how do you respond to people who don't have shelter? I think that we need to keep remembering that most laws function in such a way that you have a choice not to break the law. If you're speeding on the highway and you're pulled over, when you go on, you have a choice then not to speed anymore. Someone who's shelterless does not have a choice not to break this law. It puts them in a very, very difficult position. It kind of puts us in the moral position, I think, as a community to have to answer that question then, okay, where do people go who don't have shelter? And that's the question that we're trying to answer. The other thing I would just like to call people's attention to is that the fine for being found sleeping illegally at night is $140. Now, for someone even who's homeless and working, and there are many people who are homeless and working but can't afford shelter, if they're working at a $4 or $5 an hour job, that fine represents three times as much as they were able to make that day in wages, and that's a really disheartening situation. My feeling about the enforcement of the camping ban without giving people a legal option of a place where they can sleep is that, in fact, it makes it harder for people to get out of the situation of being homeless. It drives them further down, and again, that just seems like something that we can't support in this community.
Uh-huh. It looks like we have a caller. Hello, KZSC, you're on the air.
Yes, I think all the people who are talking ought to be examining American history to see how Social Security came about, how unemployment insurance came about. Didn't come about with a small nucleus of people coming and pleading with a government bureaucrats to give them this and that, which is what is happening here. But it came about by very massive protest and meetings, and some of them weren't always nonviolent. And so if you want to change the whole complexion of America, and a lot of people will call that socialist, and that's a word that I'm not afraid of, for everybody to have a home, a job, a decent place to live, and so on, you need to rally large numbers of people, which you're not doing. And that's unfortunate, and it's going to take you forever to get where you're going, because they will be charitable and give you a crumb, a pittance, and so on, but you're never going to solve this problem unless you get masses of people on your side.
Would either of you like to respond to that?
I'd like to say that we're not asking for anyone, we're not asking for anyone to give us anything as far as the homeless rights situation goes. And I've ran into this a lot, that, well, you just want us to give you something. We're asking for our rights to be respected. And they're not being respected. And I'd like to say the camping law isn't just against sleeping. It's also illegal to crawl into a sleeping bag or, you know, cover yourself up with blankets. The legal situation right now is that it's legal to freeze to death on the sidewalk, but it's not legal to cover yourself up with a blanket. And that's the situation in Santa Cruz. And also I'd like to see, we have rallied large groups of people to the point where we filled the city hall and filled the streets, and we still haven't gotten a response, really, or at least an adequate one.
Do you think the momentum is in your favor or against you compared to what's been achieved and what hasn't been achieved in the past?
Well, I do think time is on our side because the street people are doing fine now in many ways. A lot of us, as Sherry pointed out, are working more than ever since the earthquake. And regardless of what anybody says, you can't just get rid of campers. You know, you can arrest them, you can push them out of town, but they'll be there the next night.
I wanted to say to that too, Dan, because I have been working so much on this, and especially doing a lot of networking with community people and people who are familiar with grassroots organizing. My sense of the community is really that the momentum is on our side, that I really believe in the heart and soul of Santa Cruz. I think it's still alive, and I think we've defended, you know, the dream for a long time, and that people are still willing to do that. And it's really just, it's my sense is that that's building right now, and we're going to see that move forward. And to answer also the woman who called in, I think she may be right in some ways that we're going to have to mobilize a lot of people. But all movements start with small groups of committed people saying this matters, and I'm going to talk about it mattering and see who else joins me. And I think there are two levels to that. One is you have to certainly get people aware and conscious and educated. Another level of that is you always have to be creating models for how it could work if it's not working right now. And I think Santa Cruz has a record for being a community that creates very good models. I mean, we've created a model in Santa Cruz that's been used up and down the California coast and now around the country for how to respond to offshore oil drilling. And I think we can be a community that can create models for how to deal with the situation of homeless people in a compassionate and a caring and respectful way.
Okay. How do people in the community get involved if they're not doing something already?
Well, I can, you know, give a telephone number to call. There's a few things that come to mind right away. We're in the process right now of seeking endorsements, both from individuals and from groups who do related kinds of work, whether it's peace and social justice work or if they do human services work, religious community people. And the number to call is 425-8921 if you would like a packet of information. We're also going to be doing a petition drive. That's going to be headed up by Pete Gonzalez, who some people may know. He's been very active in the Lockheed protests and also with Central American issues. So if you're interested, you know, in helping with a petition drive in the downtown area. And also on September 4th at Loudon Nelson Center at 7:30 in the evening, we're going to hold a town hall meeting. That'll be a chance for everybody to see the proposal, to ask questions about it, to take petitions at that time if they're interested in getting people's support for this idea. And again, the number to call if you want more information, written information or questions is 425-8921.
All right. Well, I'd like to thank you both for joining us. It's been an informative talk. Also, Brian, you had a public service announcement you wanted to read, right?
Yeah, there's a public service announcement dealing with Earth First. Earth First Women's Gathering in defense of Mother Earth and Sister Judy will be at the FBI headquarters in San Francisco. That's on 450 Golden Gate Avenue this coming Tuesday, August 14th at 11 a.m. Special guest Dolores Huerta. If you know Burning Times, come prepared to sing it. Bring drums. Supportive men welcome. Again, that's the FBI headquarters, Tuesday, 11 a.m. in San Francisco.
All right. Well, thank you. Coming up next is coverage of a press conference that took place on Friday about how peace groups are responding to the war in the Mideast. But first, we're going to play some music.